10. And the last decades seen a huge number of calls out for international humanitarian aid, from natural disasters to refugee crises. And when the call goes out, there are global outpourings of sympathy and money from organizations seeking to help those in trouble. But what about aid projects on a smaller level? What's the legacy of projects that set out to, for example, build local infrastructure or drive down corruption in places like South Sudan or Iraq? Well, we're joined now by Denis Dragovich, a senior fellow at the University of Melbourne, who's been part of aid projects all over the world. Thank you for joining us this morning, Denis.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Sam. Thank you.
So, Denis, when we talk about aid projects, people usually immediately think of the large-scale missions for disaster relief and things like that for hurricanes and cyclones. Can you tell us about some of the different aid projects that you've been part of?
Well, there are those, and that's where the big money goes and the media attention and the spotlight is. But across the world, in all of the developing countries, in Africa, Asia, South America, Central America, there are aid missions going on, and a lot of them are low-key, small-scale. My own career took a path more of the former, the big missions. So it was like East Timor, where there was a huge influx of international personnel, Iraq and South Sudan. That's where I spent about 10 years of my career.
And so what sort of role have you had in these missions? What have you done personally?
Well, I started off as a shelter engineer. So what that means is in the case of East Timor, following the destruction, the international community raised funds and then purchased emergency shelters. And so these were somewhat transition shelters. So a bunch of 4x4 sort of wood, iron sheeting, nails, toolkits, and households that had their houses destroyed were given these. And I did that for about a year, crisscrossing all of East Timor, working with villagers to determine, you know, who gets them and helping them rebuild. And the idea was that this would only be temporary to get them through the first couple wet seasons. But then subsequently, I went back to have a look at what happened, and a lot of them actually become permanent housing. And that's just one example. That's East Timor. In Iraq, I worked more as a coordinator of the broader aid program, including as a country director. And so that meant what we were doing there was delivering microfinance. We were doing community development, and so engaging with villages to help them identify what their needs are and providing the support for them to get it through.
Now, of course, you mentioned media attention before. Obviously, this runs out fairly quickly for these international projects and so forth. What normally happens? You mentioned there's a pretty good outcome for the temporary housing one. What's the normal sort of outcome when the funding runs out for these aid projects?
Well, that's the problem so often. So if you look at the first decade in the 2000s, you can track where the big money and the aid went. So it went from, you know, let's say in the after 2003, straight after 2003, it was Iraq, and then after Iraq, it went to Darfur. After Darfur, it was the Asian tsunami. After tsunami, it was Pakistan earthquake, and with the money go the aid workers and the media attention, and so often what's left behind are incomplete efforts to rebuild these countries. And it's not as if projects are half finished, but to help a community recover, it's more than just individual projects. It's this comprehensive response that we are required to do, and so often then they're left half done.
And so one criticism that's often leveled at these aid efforts is that they're sort of, you know, imposing like temporary outside help that then when withdrawn leaves the community with not much to work with. So is there any way that, like, in the projects you've done where you try and help communities to, you know, set up to try and make a longer term solution?
Absolutely. And that's one of the key issues. I keep telling people it's not about needing more money. That's what NGOs will say, that's what the UN says, and that's what we get in the newspapers. But the thing that we need the most is more time. The money that we get is on such a short cycle that expectations are from the donors, whether it's the individual donors who give to a charity or whether it's the government, the expectation is to deliver change in 6 months, 1 year, 2 years. But that's just impossible. If people's and government's expectations can change to expecting something to change in 10 years' time, then that would be much more valuable, because then the money that we get in that influx when there's that media spotlight and there's the understanding that it will continue to be used for 10 years rather than 2 years, then you'll have sustainable change. It'll be a lot better.
So, Dennis, you actually went and took a trip around to these communities that you'd actually been a part of the aid effort for. What was it like interacting with those communities down the line that you'd set out to help?
Well, that's right. So I went back to East Timor, Iraq, and South Sudan as a tourist, catching up with the people to see what happened to the project. So I wanted to just know what the impact was. And in some cases, projects succeeded. In many cases, they didn't. But what did flourish and what I hadn't thought about when I'd set out on that journey is that ultimately the biggest success we had was with the people themselves, the staff that we engaged with. They then subsequently became members of parliament, leaders in their communities, successful businessmen, senior officials in different capacities, and they then took what they learnt from us and spread it in those areas that they were working in. That was the biggest success we had, and that's the often what's so forgotten. It's often about the things that we can give rather than the people that we can engage with.
Right. So moving forward, you think that a shift in focus to less just than giving money and, you know, throwing it into a community should be more on the people that are in the community.
Yeah, absolutely. So aid now is a big business. It didn't used to be. It used to be more along the lines of what people know as referred to as, you know, the Peace Corps. So you'd have an aid worker based in a certain community and engaging with the community with a limited amount of funds. Now it's about an aid worker ensconced in a compound with 24-hour electricity, high walls, good food, good salary, managing a $100 million budget. And this has taken away the most important element of aid, which is the community engagement. And so we don't need the $100 million budgets. What we need is good quality engagement that allows people to listen to what the community needs and help them help themselves.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Dennis, for joining us this morning to speak about it.
Not a problem.
And that was Dennis Dragovich, a senior fellow at the University of Melbourne, who's been a